Please welcome our speaker from the Fresno area, Lou T, with 32 years. Thank you. And he will be sharing for us tonight.
Yay!
My name's Lou T. I'm an addict. And thanks for inviting me here tonight. For me, this journey really started in about 1970. I grew up in Chicago. And I ended up in Shreeman. In Chicago, they had a place called Gateway House, and it was pretty much the same as Synanon. You'd basically just kick out. It was a two-year program. I stayed 4 days. And I remember they told me to dig a hole 6 feet by 6 feet by 6 feet. And the reason for that is when I asked them, why do you want me to do that? They said, because that's where you're going to end up. And so they were trying to get me to realize that as I was digging this hole in the backyard of this place, I should stay. And I remember I dug that hole, and after I dug it, they told me to fill it back up. I still wanted to split. They asked me to do it again. I did it again, and I split. And the problem was is that it took me all the way until 1986 when I finally got clean. And just like it talks about in the basic text, I pretty much did most of what all the different ways to try to get clean. And for me, part of the problem was in 1970, that's when I started shooting dope. And I pretty much resigned myself to the fact that that's how I was going to spend my life. And I really didn't recognize what I learned here in 1986 when I finally came to these rooms. And there are two pivotal principles about staying clean. And one is I had to abstain from all drugs in order to recover. And the second was I couldn't do it by myself. But it took a long time for me to really understand that. In fact, I remember being in treatment, and this was outpatient treatment in Southern California. I'd moved out from the Chicago area, moved to Southern California in 76. And I remember I was in this outpatient treatment. It was in the late 70s. I remember they gave me a cake because I hadn't shot dope for a year. But I was smoking weed and drinking beer and doing everything else. And I didn't understand why, you know, when I picked up again, it was as if I never stopped using. And the reason for that is we have to abstain from all drugs in order to recover one day at a time. I didn't understand that concept. So they gave me this cake with candles on it. And I was really proud of myself. But as you can imagine, I just got back into the same old shit because I didn't understand. Well, first off, I didn't really have a spiritual program. I didn't have a clue what Narcotics Anonymous really was. In fact, when I was first heard of the concept of Narcotics Anonymous, I was living in Southern California, and I thought it was like joining the Elks Club where you had to wear a fez. And, you know, we all have all these preconceptions about everything. And I had no clue. And I thought I knew all about Narcotics Anonymous, so that's why I didn't go. And so just like any dope fiend, I remember I lived with this lady. We lived together for about 13 years. And I would go through these scenes. I'm sure you've been through something similar. I'd be sitting in the John in the bathroom shooting up, and she would say, well, it's either that or me. Well, you know what I chose. And we just create so much wreckage as a result of our using. It's such a colossal disease of self-centeredness. And, you know, as I'm standing up here today, I just want you to understand, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And it's exhausting. It really is. It's just fucking exhausting. In fact, I was sharing with Ray, and Ray asked me to, if I'd be willing to share tonight, because apparently the speaker that was going to share, she had another commitment. And I just remember that So much of my recovery is for myself. I have this disease. I call him Little Eddie. And he's this 6-inch little peckerwood that sits on my shoulder and just talks shit to me. You know, my wife, she calls hers Edith, but mine's Little Eddie. So this little prick, you know, he just talks shit all the time. And the only thing that really silences that voice is the spiritual principles that I learn in here. And trust me, today Little Eddie was loud and clear. He was renting a lot of space in my head. And it's hard. It's hard to stay clean sometimes. I'm not one of these addicts where the desire to drink or use has been completely lifted. But I can tell you one thing, I haven't thought about it today. And that's a miracle. You know, I learned a long time ago that I really should have not made it past 19 years old. And to be up here today at 66 years old, I got to tell you, it's a gift. And it's all because of NA. And the reality is every decent thing in my life is a direct result of Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm not so presumptuous to say that Narcotics Anonymous is the only thing that's going to keep you clean. But for me, it always has to be my foundation. Have I tried other things along the way? Of course. And most people do. But I have to stay in NA because I've seen so many people drift away from NA, and then they think they can use like a gentleman. And, you know, for me, I just end up in some sleazebag motel shooting dope and going on another runner. That's what I do. And I don't want to live like that. In fact, I was talking to Ray, one of many runners. I remember, but one of the most recent ones before I got clean, I had ended up in treatment in 86. This is January of 86. And I first ended up in the hospital, like a lot of us do, as a result of our using. And I ended up going into treatment for a month. And this guy in the treatment program, he gave me a medallion. It was the other fellowship, because I hadn't started at NA in NA at that time. He was a member of the other fellowship, and NA owes a lot to the other fellowship. And he gave me the medallion, and when I relapsed in August of 1986, I remember looking at myself in a spoon. I could see the reflection in the spoon. I'm getting ready to shoot up. And I look as greasy as a fucking pork chop. And who wants to live like that and stay in that state? It's the only reason we come here is you have to reach a state of pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. You don't get here and smoke a joint and fall off your skateboard, and that's why you decide to come to NA. It's because you have to be, and I call it a peeled zero. Once you get to that state of being peeled zero, and it's absolute pitiful and comprehensible demoralization, that's when you realize that you need help, that you can't do it by yourself, and hopefully you've come to the understanding that you have to just reach out and ask for help. And so I remember in 86, I went 6 months clean, and I went to meetings every freaking day, and I had a sponsor, and I remember walking around with $1,000 in my pocket for 2 weeks. And let me tell you, there are plenty of addicts that told me, hey, I'll loan that to that money for you, Lou. And I didn't realize that I was setting myself up for using. The longer you stick around here, you understand more and more about you really set yourself up for a relapse long before you actually relapse. And I didn't understand that, so of course I relapsed, and once again I almost killed myself. Ended up in the hospital for a couple weeks. And my sponsor basically told me that, look, when I got out of the hospital, I ended up, they had a treatment center at this particular hospital. It was a month, and I didn't really have the funds. My insurance wouldn't pay for anymore. But I was there for a couple weeks, and I'll never forget, we had a group, and I remember one of the therapists there, and I remember sharing, you know, I just can't picture myself being 60 years old and shooting dope. And they, like, two of the therapists were in this group, and they all, like, piped in at the same time, and they basically said, well, that's because you're not going to fucking live to be 60 years old. And I don't know what it is, but when we're out there, we think we're immortal. And I thank God that I'm not using now with this fentanyl going around, because I certainly would be pushing up daisies. And my wife lost her son 3 years ago shooting heroin. And so to kid yourself and think that you can relapse today and come back in these rooms tomorrow, you're rolling the dice. I have seen more people die in these rooms. And it's not necessarily from immediately going out and getting high. It could be maybe you get in an accident because you're drunk in your car. I had Hep C for a lot of years and had to go through a couple rounds of treatment. Maybe you die from Hep C or AIDS or one of these other diseases that we pick up around here as a result of using. But if you give yourself a break and just get out of your own way, you can have a life that I guarantee if you were to write down today and try to picture what you want 5 years from now, you'll sell yourself short. And that's the way it works. You come here, you have a mountain of shit on your plate, you don't have a clue on how to compartmentalize any of it or deal with any of it. And the reality is that there's somebody in these rooms that's gone through what you're going through. And that's the beauty of it. I remember when I was in this treatment program the last time that they sent in like two or three doctors and nurses to try to get me to stay because I didn't have the funds. But I knew that if I walked out of that hospital, that I would just go back to my house, and I had a box of syringes, and I was going to just sit in a closet and use. And that's pathetic. That is pitiful and comprehensible demoralization. And I remember I stayed. I stayed there 2 weeks after I got out of the hospital. I was lucky I survived that last runner. And the nurse, you know how they give you those 28-day medallions if you stick around for 28 days? She told me that, and she was crying. She said, I want you to have this medallion, even though you haven't stayed here for a month. I want you to have this. And, you know, the reality is I've been clean since August 16, 1986. And I moved to Reno. I had a very smart sponsor, because you hear in the rooms that you really shouldn't make a geographic during your first year of recovery. You should not make a major move like that. But my sponsor was really wise. And again, he was the sponsor in the other fellowship in 86. And he basically told me, he said, Lou, you burned a lot of bridges here in L.A. You've got a great opportunity in Reno. You should go for it. And I did. And I remember when I got there, I had like a few weeks clean. And my head was spinning. Your head, when you're that new in recovery, I mean, just think about what it's like when you're that new. And if you're new here, I feel for you, but it will change. So I remember in Reno, I was a printer. And so one of the guys on my crew, I kept watching him at the end of the press. He would head this cup, and he kept lifting this cup up. And while I discovered later in the day, he had a bindle. And, of course, little Eddie's telling me, fuck, man, you need to find out where you can get some of that shit. And so he gave me the name of his connection. And when I went home that night, I called that fucking number probably 10 times. And through the grace of God, nobody picked up on the other end. So the next thing I did was I called the NA hotline in Reno, and this dude came and 12-stepped me in my hotel room for 2.5 hours, because I knew, because we're resourceful, I knew that if I stepped out of that motel room in Reno, I was going to get high. And the reality is, we're resourceful. It doesn't matter if we're in bumfuck Nebraska. We're going to score. And so he 12-stepped me for 2.5 hours. And he's got about 37 years today. And I just took to NA and Reno. I was like a sponge. I was very teachable. And most of the people, and I was very fortunate, because most of the people that I hung out with had at least 5 years clean. And most of those people, they've all got 37 plus years or more. And that's just Reno. And that's a gift. Because I don't think you're going to have much success staying clean if you don't have fun when you come to these rooms. I mean, I didn't come here to be miserable. And so when I moved to Reno, I was very, very teachable, because we're all broken people when we get here. We're just completely broken. And so you have to be able to reach out and ask for help, because my way didn't work anymore. And I didn't want to die, and I wanted to change, but I didn't know how. And so I became willing. And when I came to NA, I would characterize myself as an atheist. I didn't believe in God. But what I've learned today is that God led me to NA, and NA led me to God. And it took a while. And when I got to NA, I would listen to these people, and to me, and it still is, very profound. I remember this dude telling me, you've got to get into neology. And I go, what the hell is neology, man? He said, well, you have to hit your knees, man. And so I've done that every day. I hit my knees in the morning, I ask God for help, and at night before I go to bed, I thank God for keeping me clean. And my wife, we just got married. She's sitting back in the corner. We've been together 21 years. We've been married a year. So you don't want to rush into these things, people. I had this cat, and he lived to be 20 years old. I'm into cats. And we were talking about this today when I met her in Connecticut, because I was living in Connecticut at the time. She told her mother, she said, Mom, I really like this guy, but all he does is talk about his cats. And her mother went, oh, really? Anyway, this cat, she soon discovered that he was a cool cat. But he prayed with me every day. I would just wrap him in my arms in the morning and at night. And he slept between my legs every day. How many people have slept between your legs every day for 20 years? But he was a true gift. He was a gift. And, you know, I never had a chance to experience any of this stuff because, you know, like I said, I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And when you're in that mode and you just have the blinders on finding the ways and means to get more, it doesn't leave much in your life to explore other things. And most addicts that I know, we're really creative people, you know, we're pretty smart people. But we've just under the grip and the throes of addiction, and so it makes it very difficult to pursue anything in your life. Like, I was a really heavy smoker. And through the grace of God, I tried working the steps on quitting smoking. And so when I had 9 months clean, I stopped smoking. And so it's been over 31 years since I've had a hit off a cigarette. I think it's important that I share this because I knew that if I was living in L.A., I was working in, you know, behind a printing press all day. Excuse me. And so if you're not familiar with that environment, living in L.A., smoking two packs a day of Camel filters and working behind a printing press, my lungs were toast. And I knew that I was going to die if I continued to smoke. And it wasn't easy at first quitting, but man, am I grateful. Talk about freedom from addiction. That's what this program promises, is freedom from addiction. And I don't need to smoke today, but I want to share this one thing because this is how insidious this disease is. I was overseas on business. I was in Spain. And I think I had probably 14 years of recovery at this point, okay? This is 2000. And I'm over there, and this guy that I'm with on business, he said, hey, look, we can get some Cuban cigars. And I'm thinking, oh, man, that really sounds great. I think I'd like to have a Cuban cigar. Now, bear in mind, they quit smoking. And then this is divine inspiration or divine thought. You know how we're able to play that tape all the way out? Right? So like, and I'm dating myself, but I was taught that the minute I get the thought of wanting to use, I have to think of my head as being a cassette deck. Now I'm really dating myself. Probably people here don't even know what the hell a cassette deck is. And the minute I get that thought of wanting to use, I was told to hit pause, eject. Right? Because we cannot afford more than a few milliseconds. We don't have the luxury of sitting and thinking about using more than that because we'll romanticize it. So anyway, my colleague says to me, hey, let's get these Cuban cigars. And then the next thought was, I knew that I started thinking, okay, I'm playing this tape out all the way. If I smoke this Cuban cigar, I'm going to want to drink beer because I love drinking beer. I mean, I drink beer every day. And then I'm going to want to smoke a joint because I smoke pot every day. And then I'm going to want to shoot dope. And so that's how it just blew me away that is how insidious this disease is. This disease wanted to take me out by something as simple as smoking a cigar. And that's how we have to really be vigilant. And that's the only way you get to recognize that kind of thinking is staying around here and walking through those episodes in your mind of ways that this disease wants to take you out. I've seen a lot of people long-term recovery relapse. A lot of people. And like I said, I'm not one of these people where the desire to drink or use has been completely lifted. And it scares the shit out of me because I know that, you know, the minute I get high, I'm done. It's over. I just don't see myself surviving because 32 years ago, I barely survived back then. How the hell am I going to do it now? I'm an old man, right? So, like I said, when I got to Reno and really embraced Narcotics Anonymous, I'm into motorcycle riding, so we would ride our Harleys down to Carson City and we got really involved in H&I and these guys that I'd ride with. I mean, I'll tell you a story. This is the miracle of this program. Within the last 3 months, I made two road trips on my Harley up to Miranda, up in the Redwoods, just south of Eureka, California, off of 101, way up there. Well, one of my buddies he's got to have like 37, 38 years. He's one of the guys that I hooked up with and connected with in Reno. And he and about five or six other guys in the rooms, a couple of them who I knew when I moved out of Reno, and I moved from Reno in 93. We all met up in Miranda and are riding together. I mean, what a gift is that? This dude, let me tell you, he's had a kidney transplant and a liver transplant, and he's still and he's in his early 70s, and he's still kicking and writing hard. And I'm thinking, what a gift. I don't have friends that are that old. I really don't. And it's just such a beautiful thing to be able to have those kind of lasting friendships as a result of these rooms. And they're safe. To be around these people, it's safe because we don't use. We're not caught up in using. And so when I was in Reno, these guys really taught me, and that's why it's so important to get a sponsor who you know is going to be able to call you on your bullshit. And I remember, like, these early meetings that I'd go to in Narcotics Anonymous, I was just interested in getting laid. I don't know about you people. And I would, and usually the groups were like in a circle, right? And I'd be like scoping out the whole room, and I'd be looking around the room, and then all of a sudden I'd lock eyes with my sponsor who's, you know, staring at me. Who knows exactly what the fuck I'm doing and how inappropriate it is, right? It's just completely inappropriate. And he would pull my covers. And that's why it's important to find somebody. You see, the reality is, when for anybody who's relatively new here, we know what you're going to do before you even do it because we've already done it. We know it. We've lived that behavior. And it's like one of the meetings that's my home group in Fresno, we read the self-acceptance IP. And one of the things that it always makes me think of is, how can you have any self-acceptance when you come here if everything you've done is unacceptable? You don't get this overnight. I mean, I don't feel like self-acceptance all day long. I'm not like, you know, Stuart Smiley sitting in front of a mirror going, yeah, I'm, you know, just perfect guy, you know. I mean, we do everything in our life is just unacceptable because we don't know how to live. And we have to be taught. We have no spiritual program in our life. And that's the beauty of this program, is it really gives us a roadmap on how to live. And it's problematic because I'm what I do for a career, I don't really want to get into it, but let's just say that I deal with addicts all day long. And the reality is that, as we all know, this isn't for people that need it. It's for people who want it. And that's why all these programs out there, it's a waste of time unless people really want it. And I'd like to share because, and I'm not about to share this because I'm egotistical. It's because when I was in Reno, I decided that I wanted to get my bachelor's degree because in the early 70s I dropped out. I was a hippie radical and it was just interfering with my drug using, and it really was. And so I thought, as a personal goal, because I had like 3 years clean and I was living in Reno, I wanted to go back to school. And so I went back to school and I ended up getting my bachelor's degree, and I was really proud of myself. I worked my ass off to get that. It was really hard. And then I thought, you know, because I'm one of these guys, I got to work twice as hard as you to be half as good. And so I decided, you know what, I think I'd like to apply to law school. And so I applied to law school, spent a year getting my financial affairs in order, and went to law school. And after my first year, because I'm anal retentive, and I decided, you know, I want to get a master's degree at the same time. So I did a dual degree. And so, like, in 3 years, I worked my ass off, and I got a master's degree and my law degree. And then after that, and as that opened a lot of doors for me, work-wise. And but what I want to share, and then after that, I went, can't remember how many years after that. It was about 4 years after that, I got another master's degree, an advanced law degree. And the reason I'm sharing this is, when I was in Reno, there were four of us that were either going to law school or in law school. All of us are IV drug users. And this is just one NA area in the entire world. And that's the way this program works, because once you get out of your own way, you really can set goals for yourself and apply yourself, because you're not spending your entire time finding the ways and means to get more. And I am not unique. That's the other thing. By sharing with you that there are four of us, that's just going, you know, being involved in law school. I see people doing all sorts of things with their lives. You know, I have more respect for somebody getting out of the joint, being handed a paper bag with nothing else in their life, working a menial job, maybe flipping burgers at McDonald's, than somebody that's getting, you know, welfare handouts. That is self-acceptance. That is something to be proud of. And that's what you learn here. That's what it takes to rebuild your life. You're the one that has to be able to look at yourself in the mirror. And when you come here, it's brutal honesty if you're working the steps. So if you have a really good sponsor and you're honest with yourself, you're going to realize and recognize, hey, you know, what I'm doing maybe isn't the right thing to do, and I need to turn this around if I really want to stay clean. Because everything has a price tag. I'll never forget this. When I got clean, that first sponsor I had that I told you was really wise, and he said, hey, go to Reno, Lou. He created this inventory. It was really cool. It like had maybe like 40 items on it, from buying a CD to getting a car, right? And so, and then next to the item, he would list like how much serenity that gave you. Okay, so you buy a CD, you're going to get maybe an hour out of it, right? New pair of shoes, you're going to stare at your shoes all day long, you know, maybe a day, right? And you go down the list, you know, your car, yeah, it wears off after 6 months. And the point he's trying to make to me is, man, this is a spiritual program. There's no material thing. And let me tell you, I've got some issues right now that I have to work on, you know, because sometimes I like to fill my life with material possessions, think they're going to make me feel good, and they don't, because it's a spiritual hole that's inside me. And it's just my disease acting out in another way. But at least I know it. It's you get this consciousness of yourself and this wisdom about yourself and your behavior because you're surrounding yourself with people and who can read you, pull your covers, and help you recognize where you need to change. I'd like to close and just say, look, like I said, maybe Narcotics Anonymous isn't the only way to get clean. I know for myself it's the only way that's kept me clean. I watch other people. I've seen a lot of people over the years. All I know that this is a program where I've met a lot of beautiful people, and thank God that I'm here today speaking to you instead of pushing up daisies. But thanks for letting me share.